and welcome to the brand new podcast from Fun Kids. This is the Fun Kids Book Club. Yes, that's right. It's a podcast all about books. I have got a lot of stuff to tell you all about, actually. So we chatted recently to Greg James and Chris Smith. They've got a brand new book out called Kid Normal. So you can hear a little bit of that interview. We also have our top five picks for the summer. I'll be chatting to Jim Smith, who is the author of the Future Rat Boy series. And I tell you what, why don't we throw in a little chat with Frankie as well? Frankie's a Fun Kids presenter, and he's got a favourite book that he wants to tell us all about, so we'll do that later on too. But right now, first of all, I'm going to ask you a trivia question, a book trivia question, and I'll tell you the answer at the end of the podcast. Okay, the question is this. It's kind of in two parts. How many books are there in the Hetty Feather series? And more importantly, can you name all of them? I will tell you the answer, don't worry, after a lot of stuff. The first thing is Greg James and Chris Smith. Here we go.
It's Dan on Fun Kids with radio superstars and now superstar authors, Greg James and Chris Smith. How are you doing?
Wow, good. I mean, better for being described as a superstar.
Superstars.
Superstar radio
superstars
people.
On Fun Kids. It's fun for kids. There's some kids, let's have fun.
I don't know why we pay people to make jingles. We've got you two.
We are really excited to be on Fun Kids because although we are on the radio together, me and Chris, my niece and nephew love Fun Kids. So the fact that I'm on this now will be so exciting for them.
Absolutely. My son always has Fun Kids on. I'm like, so where's Dennis the Menace? Can we meet him afterwards?
Yeah, we keep him like in a private room just in case.
Okay.
You know, for the
just
the extra,
as well. Yeah.
For the extra superstars.
I want him to sign my slingshot that I've brought.
I'm sure we can sort that out.
So I was thinking, we've got into this radio superstars. So Greg, you obviously chat to a lot of like important people in the day job. Have you got any tips for me doing this interview?
I don't think you need any tips. You're already in the hot seat. I think it's just if you can talk to humans, you can talk to humans with a microphone on. But when you get over the fact that you are sort of in a slightly unnatural environment, then you'll be fine, I think. Just imagine you're, you know, just talking to someone on the bus, except there's no bus. But if you want to imagine a bus, that might help you.
Let's imagine we're on the bus. Because they always say if you feel a little bit nervous about talking to someone, you should imagine them on the toilet. But don't do that, because if we were on the toilet, we wouldn't want you to come and interview us. That'd be weird.
I find that a very strange thing that people say.
Yeah, it is weird, isn't it? Why do people say that?
Because I just get distracted. If I was doing a speech and I'm trying to think of everyone on the toilet, I think you'd just get distracted and go, I'm just imagining everyone on the toilet now.
And now I need the toilet.
And why are there 300 toilets in here? It's unrealistic.
Had I have known that this was how the interview would start, I would have tried to get some equipment to let me interview you on the bus or the toilet.
What? You are... We don't know. We can't see below there.
Actually, what's happening under that desk?
I prefer that you keep your eyes on mine, if that's okay.
I think it's sat on the toilet over there.
Really?
Chris, as a newsreader, important
yes.
voice.
So serious, yes.
You have to let people know what's going on. I'm about to give a brief explanation of what's happening in the new book, Kids Normal.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got any tips for me to make people sit up and take notice?
Keep it snappy, keep it concise, and start off with a really good headline. So the first sentence you say has got to make me want to listen to you for the next 30 seconds.
What would it be like to go to a school full of superheroes?
I'm interested. Tell me more.
Murph is an absolutely normal boy. He gets chucked into a school that's way out of his depth. Greg, Chris, tell us more.
That's actually quite a good headline. But that is the premise of the book. Yes, Murph Cooper is a wonderful little chap who keeps getting moved around. His mum gets new jobs and he moves schools quite a few times, and they try and scrabble together to find a new school. And they settle on this school, which turns out to be not all that it seems. It's a school for young superheroes. So we call them capabilities in the book, or capes for short. And Murph is enrolled in this school. There's a little mix-up, and he gets enrolled in this school, and it's not until a couple of days into the school that he realises that he's very much out of place. And by that point, he knows too much and can't leave, so the teachers decide to keep him in there, and he has to then work out how to survive and thrive in this new, slightly weird environment.
We've also got crazy characters that do all sorts in this, like that summon horses, tiny mini horses that summon storms. How much fun did you have writing the book, Chris?
Well, we had loads of fun writing it, because we decided that when you're born with or you develop a capability or a cape, like a superpower, not all superpowers necessarily have to be useful. Because, you know, in most superhero stories, people gain, like, a superpower in, like, a radioactivity accident or whatever. And it's always something really useful, like they can fly or they have super strength or super speed or something like that. And they thought, well, why don't you... What happens if you just get a really random capability, like you can summon, as you say, two tiny horses out of thin air, or you can accidentally inflate your hands when you don't mean to, or you can fire flowers out of your wrists instead of spider webs. So that's what happens at this school that Murph's at. There are kids there that have got really useful superpowers, capabilities, like they're able to fly, or they do have super strength, and they may go on to become working superheroes when they grow up. But the rest of the kids, who can do random things like create soup out of thin air, they just have to learn to hide it, because otherwise they're going to have a terrible life, because everyone's going to think they're a complete weirdo. So they're at school to learn how to control their cape and keep it secret. So we had so much fun, because we just literally got to sit down in a room and make up loads of really random superpowers and make each other laugh.
The only test really when we were writing it was, it's great to write in a pair because, you know, when we do the radio show together, we are just trying to make each other laugh the whole time, and it's a good instant test for that. So when we're sitting writing the book, we could run something past one another, and if it made us laugh, it would pretty much go in. So we just had, I'd like to say there was a struggle, and we were sat there in sort of writer's scarves, and it was sort of, you know, a cold winter's day, and it was all, and it was all moody, and it, but actually we just had a lot of fun writing it, and hopefully that's what people find when they read it, that they can, that they also have fun reading it, because it's supposed to be a silly adventure, but I'd say it's got a big heart.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's but it has, it's a story about feeling displaced, and it's about feeling a bit maybe left out at school, or if you feel perhaps like everyone's bigger than you and amazing and sort of talented at stuff, and you just feel a bit like, oh, I don't know what my thing is. The story is very much about that, and celebrating the fact that everyone's different, but everyone's got their own thing. It just might take a bit longer for you to find your thing.
And were there any crazy characters that you had brilliant ideas for that maybe you didn't use when you got to the final book?
A couple of teachers got cut out, didn't they? Mrs. Fletcher, the librarian, did go in, who's one of our favourites. She almost didn't make it, but we did put her in. So the school has a library run by a lady called Mrs. Fletcher. And obviously all the teachers at the school have capabilities. They have capes as well as the kids, because they've got to all be in the community to keep the school secret. Mrs. Fletcher's head turns into a foghorn when she gets angry, which is not great for a librarian, obviously, because you've got to try and keep quiet in
That's
the library.
So good.
So if you annoy her, then she'll suddenly go... right in your face.
Very good foghorn.
Thanks very much.
I think you've worked on the foghorn, may I
little
say.
A little bit.
Yeah. That was really impressive. I'm sort of stunned at that.
How's your foghorn?
A very personal question. No, it's more like a goose.
Well, maybe in future books we could have like a goose-based superhero. Goose boy.
So you obviously make each other laugh a lot on the radio, and you've worked together for a long time now doing the day job. How did you come to write this book? Were you approached, or were you just jotting things down in your spare time?
Well, we always like coming up with silly characters, especially on Greg's podcast. We came up with, like, for instance, the Butter Monster, who's a monster. He lives in the fridge, obviously. He's made of butter.
You know, there's when you have dirty butter.
Yeah.
So it's sort of that you get sort of the crumbs.
When you've had toast, you know, and then the crumbs or the Marmite goes back into the butter. Yeah.
My mum is a fiend for dirty butter.
It's just
the knife in there all the time, leaves it wherever she can.
It's the worst.
So we think that if there's too many crumbs in the butter, then the Butter Monster comes up and has a word with you.
Anyway,
so we created the Butter Monster.
So we had the Butter Monster and lots of other ridiculous characters, and we enjoyed coming up with characters so much we thought we'd come up with some and try and write them down in a book. And we came up, we were writing a few different stories actually. We started writing a completely different book, but then came up with the idea of Kid Normal. We were sitting in the park one summer's day a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
You said it wasn't romantic as well, that you weren't doing it on a cold winter's night, but you both writing on a warm summer's day together.
Yeah.
It's a very nice picture in my head.
It was a lovely evening.
It was romantic.
Yeah.
Lovely evening.
And one of those when you go home and think, well, I think we've actually just had a good idea for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And now the story's hilarious, but also the words that you use to tell it, I know it sounds so stupid, but they're really well thought out. They're really funny too. How much thought did you give to putting precise jokes in certain moments in the book?
Well, We really care about this book a lot, and it's the thing. I don't want to speak on behalf of my colleague here.
Well, you speak on behalf of me, and I'll make a foghorn noise if I don't agree with anything.
It's the thing I'm most proud of that I've ever been part of, I think, because this is a thing that will just is there. It's a physical thing that will be on bookshelves, and you know, whether people listen to the radio show or not, they can access this, and it can be a whole new thing for them. And we're incredibly proud of it. But it's sort of rooted in the fact that we both love reading, and as kids we loved reading stories and just, you know, taking our imaginations to wherever. And I think one of the main things we want to do is just to make sure people keep reading and young kids get into reading, and also know the fact that they can write a book if they want to. They can, if there is a story they have, you know, just go and write it. Go and do some stuff, be imaginative, because as brilliant as films and TV shows are, it's all laid out for you on a TV show or a film. It's all there. So you just sit there and you are served it. But the great thing about a book, or even the radio, is that you're given half of the picture, and then you have to create the rest of it. So we tell you about Murph Cooper, or we tell you about the school, we tell you about Mary, his best friend, who has an umbrella who flies and all the rest, but is nothing like Mary Poppins, by the way, for legal reasons. But you have to then fill in the other stuff. What does he look like? How does he talk? What's his accent? That kind of thing. Well, what does the school look like? And that's why we loved writing this, is because we do half the work and then the readers put their half in, and we'll never know what their half of it is, but that's kind of magical.
Well, that's what your job is, though, isn't it? I mean, a lot of people think just radio presenters are sat here pressing buttons, telling bad jokes, introducing the same song quite often.
I mean, we do that as well.
But
yeah,
the main job is telling stories. You're a storyteller. Yeah. You tell the story of the news. What do you think the most important part of telling and writing a story is?
I think you have to care about the people that the story's about, and I think the more you know about someone, then the more you care what happens to them. So I think it's just a question of coming up with characters, even though they can fly with an umbrella or conjure tiny horses out of thin air, that they feel like real people. And they certainly felt like real people to us. You know, we sort of find ourselves caring about what happens to them. And when they're in danger in the book, you sort of go like, oh, I hope it turns out okay. And then you remember, oh, it's fine, I'm writing the story, so I can make them have a happy ending. Or not, no spoilers.
But also, when you do a radio show and when we do stuff, we want everyone to feel like we're in the gang together, and it's not just us going, here's a show, listen to the show, or read our book and go away. It's very much like we want everyone to
but
be in the gang.
We do want people to do this right now, don't we?
Yeah, of course. I mean, but you know, when you do a show or when we do shows or whatever, we want everyone to feel included. It's not a party you're not invited to. So this book is very much that as well. It's a party that everyone's welcome to, and they can put in their own ideas, and we want people to feel like they own the characters as well.
And also, you'll find that you can't just be a passive reader. This isn't a book you can just sit and read quietly. There are points during the book when you will be asked to take part, shout things out, sing a song, whatever.
Yeah. So this is the first book you've written with the two of you. Yeah. When I was young, I used to write all the time. I was wondering if there were any books that you had started and stopped writing or got done in a page when you were young that maybe you could tell us about.
I wrote a story. I won a prize, actually, when I was young.
What was the prize?
What was it? It was £12.50 worth of book tokens.
Oh,
I know.
£12.50 back in the day.
Back in the day,
that's like £1 million.
I know. I bought the entire
every book in the world.
Bought the entire Chronicles of Narnia with that, because I wrote a story about finding an egg on a riverbank on holiday and it hatching into a dinosaur.
It was called Egg Normal.
No, it wasn't. It was called Where Are the Brandy Snaps? Because that's what the dinosaur liked to eat.
Greg, writing as a duo, what's Chris's best quality, I want to say, when you kind of sat down to write together?
Chris is an incredibly funny man, and
that's true.
But also, he, I don't know really, what's his best quality? He's just a very talented, intelligent, well-read man. And I think that I bring things to this that he doesn't, and vice versa. So I think we meet beautifully in the middle with a lot of stuff. And I think we encourage each other to go to that weird place in your brain and not be frightened to write it. And I think that's a really good thing for anyone who wants to write a book or just create anything, is find some people to collaborate with who just sort of let you do stuff and don't go, well, that's rubbish, or well, that's a bit weird. Or we both just kind of go, No, that's great. Let's how about we do this with that, or we'll just chip in. I think that's why I like working with Chris so much.
Well, I want to ask you the reverse then. What's the most annoying trait that Greg has when you sit down to write? After he's been so glowing to you.
How do I get that question and he gets that one?
The most annoying thing about Greg is that he used to have one of those cards that you can get free Nando's, and he doesn't have it anymore.
You had the famous black card.
Yeah.
It was revoked.
What do you reckon?
I think it's because we ate too much Nando's.
What do you reckon you can do to get it back?
I don't want it back. I don't want it. No. Don't go. Never go back.
Is that what they say?
Are you all bitter now?
Not bitter. I'm over
you
it.
You are. You're as bitter as extra hot peri peri sauce.
I was so nice about him, and he talked about chicken.
I'm sorry.
That sums it up in many ways.
Greg, so with the new book, you've been on the radio for a while. Now you've been on TV, done the cricket. You've raised loads of money for charity last year. You've had your own comedy show a little bit. You were once a Nando's black card holder. What is left to do? What do you fancy next?
Get that card back. I want to keep writing these. I would like to see out my days. Not to be too morbid about it, but I really enjoy creating stuff, whatever it is. And I love presenting, and I love doing radio shows and everything, but I like creating things, whether it's, you know, comedy scripts or these old books like Kid Normal, whatever it is. I like sitting in a room coming up with things that weren't there before.
I've got one more question that's a little bit fun, kidsy, if that's okay.
Of course.
So on my show every afternoon, we do the Animal Hour. 60 minutes of the best safari songs, Greg. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds incredible.
Wow.
Who has been the most important animal in Chris Smith's life?
I mean, what? You mean like one specific animal?
Well, I mean, if a horse saved your life, fine. If you've got a dog that you love, that's okay too.
Yeah. I mean, I think my favourite like species of animal is definitely the pangolin.
Tell me more.
Because it's just, you know, it's shy and small. It can roll into a ball. I'm not writing a poem about pangolins.
It's small.
It's shy. It's small. It can roll into a ball. It's a pangolin. A pangolin.
Never heard of a pangolin.
You're kidding.
Search for it now.
Right.
Have a look at what a pangolin is like.
You need to get on the search engine of your choice and look for the pangolin.
The Animal Hour.
In terms of specific animals, I've got to say Mabel, who's my cat, because she'll be listening at home right now. And if I don't say her, then she'll probably scratch me when I get home.
Greg, who's been the most important animal in your life?
Who?
Apart from this pangolin right here.
Who's been the most important? The most important two animals are my parents, I would say. Because without me, without them, I wouldn't be here. And without me, they wouldn't be here now. And they're retired teachers, and I'm
supporting them.
I'm floating in that boat.
And if anyone's thinking that Greg's parents, they're going like, oh, they're humans, they're not really animals. Actually, that's not true, because his mum was an owl.
Yes. And my dad's a giraffe.
There you go.
So that's why I am wise, but tall.
Greg, Chris, thank you so much for coming into Fun Kids.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you to Dan for chatting to Greg James and Chris Smith. Kid Normal is out right now at this very second in time. Now, summer holidays are here, and the thing about summer holidays, let's face it, British weather, not always great. Sometimes you need to be indoors. And what we've done is collect the 5 top books we think you're going to need on your bookshelf for the summer holidays to get involved with if you need to be indoors. So, or, you know, or outdoors. Let's face it, you can read outdoors as well. I've got my resident book expert, Imogen, here. Now, Imogen, I found her in the corner of my local bookshop, just rummaging through all of the shelves, and I thought, that looks like a person who knows the books. So, Imogen, tell me, okay, give me some books, 5 of your top favouritest books that we can read this summer.
Okay, so the first book we have for the summer is The Bolds on Holiday by Julian Clary.
Yeah, good choice.
It's a brilliant book. It's illustrated beautifully. It's all about the hairiest family in Teddington, and they decide to go on holiday down to Cornwall to the beach.
We should say the Bolds are actually hyenas.
Oh yeah, they're hyenas. Yeah, we forget that crucial point. They're not just hairy people.
No.
They're hyenas. And they go on holiday to Cornwall, to the seaside. And when they're down there, Bobby is mistaken for a pup and is taken by the wicked dog napper. Dun, dun, dun!
Has that ever happened to you in your summer holidays?
No.
No.
No, it hasn't. Was once mistaken for a German girl.
Okay.
But someone asked me a question in German, like, where's the beach? And I didn't know what they were talking about. But no, never been mistaken for a pup.
Right, okay.
No. So the dog napper takes her. So the family have to hunt her down and rescue all the other dogs. And you will read what happens. It's a wonderful book. It's illustrated so beautifully. And it was a great one for the summer.
So that is The Bowls on Holiday?
The Bowls on Holiday.
By Julian Clary.
Yes.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, that's the newest one in the series as well, I believe.
Indeed it is. And so you can read all the other ones as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of series-es.
Series-es. Holidays, they're long. They're long and sometimes quite boring. If you don't fill them full of wonderful books. So we thought you might want to get your teeth into a series.
I think this is a really good idea. Which series have you picked?
We've picked the Tom Gates series.
Oh, yes, by Liz Pichon.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a amazing book series. It's basically all about Tom Gates. And he doodles and he does comic books and he's a master of excuses, and basically he's just the bane of his teacher's life. And we've all met those kids in school, and he's just a funny kid. And basically it's just a wacky journal of scribbles and silliness, and you'll be groaning and you'll be laughing all the way through, and they're really fun books to get involved with. And I think it's a great series to get to grips with, if especially if it's your first series. That's a great one to pick.
There are loads of them, and if you've got a whole summer, I think what better than actually getting stuck in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Get through one series and then you'll be addicted.
One series?
One book, one series.
Get through one book, then you'll be addicted. But
You'll read one series and be addicted to series.
Series, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, number three is The World's Worst Children 2 by David Walliams.
Now, I have a bone to pick with David Walliams. I think... when does he stop writing?
Never.
He has, like, a new book out every hour, I think.
I think he just constantly writes. Maybe there's two of him.
That would make more sense, to be honest. If he's on TV and writing books at the same time, he must be exhausted, poor man.
I know. When does he ever stop?
I don't think he does. So this is the second book, because there was The World's Worst Children, like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second one. Is it 10 more kids?
Yeah. So 10 kids, 10 stories about a gang of horrible children. And it's all illustrated and it's in beautiful colour. And it's just, you know, a great book about horrible kids.
It's 10 kind of, I think it's 5 boys, 5 girls,
yep.
All horrible kids.
Yeah.
Who I think when you read it, you'll be like, oh, at least I'm not that bad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a way to make you feel a bit better about yourself. When your mum says you're being really naughty and you're a horrible child, you can be like, well, mum, I'm not as bad as, you know, Griselda, Gruesome Griselda, or Fussy Frankie.
Yeah, you could be like, well, I could be worse. Mum, you're lucky, if anything, to have me. Say that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're lucky.
What's the next up on the list?
Next up is a bit of a different one.
Yeah.
It's the F2 Football Academy. So this is one for you if you like to be outside in the garden, go down the park, you love football. It's from the guys at F2, from their YouTube, Billy and Jeremy, and they're football freestylers. And it's basically all the top tips and tricks that footballers do, and if you want to bring up your football skills, you've got plenty of time to do it over the summer holiday. There's an app that goes with it that will bring the book to life, so you can see them doing the tricks and you can have a go at it yourself.
Yeah, I think I've had a flick through the book and there are loads of pictures, so it's really easy to get to grips with, and it looks really good fun as well, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm rubbish at football, but I think after a summer of this book, a pro.
You could be the next Ronaldo or Wayne Rooney or other footballers.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other footballers. I'm too busy reading
Crouch.
Books. Bit of an old reference there.
Messi.
Messi will do. That'll do. Right, so what is the last book you're recommending?
And the last book is The Matilda Effect by Ellie Irving.
This is brand new, I think.
Brand new book.
Yeah.
So if you love the original Matilda by Roald Dahl, you will probably love this book too. It's kind of gives a little wink to Roald Dahl.
You're winking at me as you say that. I like
it. Yeah, a little wink to Roald Dahl. And it's basically Matilda is a little girl and she loves inventing things and she loves science. And she enters a science competition at her school and she wants to become a famous inventor, but she doesn't win the school science fair competition because the teachers and the judges don't believe that it's her own work because she's a girl.
Boo.
No. So she's all down in the dumps. So she goes to her grandma called Joss and she finds out that her grandma was actually a scientist way back when. And her grandma was an astrophysicist and she discovered her own planet. Clever, clever,
yeah,
girly.
Clever granny.
Yeah, but her granny's boss stole it from her. Stole the discovery. Dun, dun, dun.
So I'm guessing they're trying to kind of like get retribution. Kind of prove that granny found that thing once and for all.
Yeah, so Matilda concocts a plan to tell everyone the truth.
You see, I think that's really exciting, that book.
Me too.
I think that sounds amazing. And I've had a little flick through it as well. It just looks really good. And
yeah,
I've read a few bits. It's really fun. So I'd recommend that one too.
Yeah. So especially for people who love the classics, they can renew their love for Matilda in a different way. But for people who've never read the old Matilda, this is like an amazing way into kind of that world. And yeah, it's just a really exciting book.
So that is the Matilda Project.
Matilda Effect.
The Matilda Effect. So that's the Matilda Effect. Okay, cool.
Yes, that's the Matilda Effect by Ellie Irving. And those are the five picks for the holiday.
Yay! Thanks, Imogen. Thanks, Book Expert.
Woo.
Will you come back later and, like, will you come back in another podcast and help us out again?
Of course I will.
Thank you very much to Imogen. She'll be back next time with loads more book recommendations. Now, recently I got to chat to Jim Smith. He is the author of the Future Rat Boy series. And this is what happened. Hey, it's Bex. I'm joined by Jim Smith. Hello.
Hello.
Now, you're the author of... I've got it in my hand right here. I'm going to show it to you, although you've probably seen it before.
I've never seen that before.
You've never seen it?
No.
Wow. Well, you're in for a treat, my friend. You've written a book, did you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Future Rat Boy and the Quest for the Missing Thingy. It is the third in the series, I believe.
Yes.
What's happening now to Colin? What's going on with Colin Lamppost?
It all went wrong 2 books ago
for
him. He was zapped to the future inside a bin with his toy bird, who's called Bird, and there happened to be a rat in there, and he got crossed with the rat. Actually, there was a TV in there as well, so he got crossed with the rat and the TV. So now he's half boy, half rat, half TV.
I mean, it's happened to all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, classic story.
It's a memoir, in a way.
So what is going on in the new book?
In the new book, hang on a minute, I've forgotten.
How can you forget?
Because I'm writing another book now.
Oh, my, okay, so there's a thing with Mr. X in this book.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Mr. X has a pet.
Oh, you're telling me, yeah.
He's pretty bad.
Oh, yeah, that's it. It's the mayor of Schnozville.
That's the
which
one?
Is the town. It's the mayor of Schnozville's birthday.
Yep.
And he's got a new... statue of himself for his birthday.
Sure, well, you would though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Then Mr. X, the baddie in the town, turns up with his new creature, who's called Gozo, and he eats the statue of the mayor and then starts to eat everything else as well. So they've got to get that stuff all back.
Is that the thingy that they're looking for?
No, it's not. Oh. I actually came up with the title before I knew what it was. So I just thought, I like the idea of the missing thingy. Then I had to work out what the thingy was.
Well, the word thingy is quite a fun word.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Something about it.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about words, actually, because is this whole book series just an excuse for you to make up your own language? Because there's like Maze Kills in here, there's Socktober,
kind of.
There's just loads of funny
words. I would be doing
words.
That anyway.
Yeah?
But I just happen to be writing it down at the moment.
Well, like, how do the words pop into your head?
I think they just pop into... They pop into my head all the time. I just write them down.
Right.
I get the feeling they pop into everyone's heads.
But
it's just
like,
whether you write it down or not.
You can legitimately make it into a book.
Yes, I try to.
So did you say you're writing a new one as well?
Yeah, I'm writing a new Barry Loser book, which is... this was a spin-off from Barry Loser books, because Future Rat Boy is Barry Loser's favourite TV show.
Oh.
So I'm writing Barry Loser Worst School Trip Ever.
And is it must be confusing then, like, just having loads of books and stuff on the go. That must be quite difficult to kind of keep track of what's going on next.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to remember what you're writing while you're writing it, I find.
Why was it a rat?
I think there's sort of different types of humans, and I think I fall into the ratty type, so...
What is a ratty type?
Just kind of a bit of a ratty nose and face. But I like ratty. I think ratty people look quite good.
Okay.
Well, you know, there's like kind of hedgehog people and...
Do you just compare people to things you find in parks? Like
yeah, no, I know. No, they're usually animals, yeah. If you look around, you can start kind of... I'm trying to wonder what you look like now, but I'm not sure yet.
A little bit worried.
Yeah. I'm not very good at it, okay. So I can't diagnose you straight away.
It'll take a bit of time.
I think, yeah.
In about 10 hours, you'll be like, Bex, by the way...
I'll Google you and have a look.
You look like a...
Yeah, I'll email you. Yeah, yes. Might be a mouse.
So you've got Barry Laser books and you've got these books. Have you got another series, like another spin-off on the go as well?
No.
I feel like you're the kind of person who'd have like another thing.
I'd like to, yeah. What could I, like maybe just The Adventures of Notbird on his own.
Well, not, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not, yeah, exactly. When you, call it that.
Yeah, please do. And then give me some of the royalties.
Yeah.
When you do the books, I assume you write and you draw as well.
Yeah, it's all an excuse to draw, really.
I was going to say, like, what do you enjoy the most? Is there something that leads the story
the
more?
The story is a just complete and utter hassle. And the drawing is just kind of pure pleasure.
Right.
Yeah. So and I can listen to music and podcasts and stuff while I draw. Whereas while you're writing, you have to have complete silence, I find.
When you're drawing, is that like you're drawing a thing and you're like, I really like this thing, so I'm going to make it into part of the story?
Yeah, definitely. How did you know that?
just a hunch. Yeah, because the book is a really good book, I think. So I have some little relatives who are like 8 years old and they're not big into reading yet.
Yeah.
But I think this is perfect because it's a really good book to get into. It's really accessible and you've got pictures which bring
it
to
life. Yeah, I mean, I always found a whole page of writing quite daunting as a kid. I still do as an adult. It's nice to break it up with a picture.
It's quite intimidating, isn't it?
Because it's all about turning the pages, I think.
Yeah.
Getting to the end.
And then feeling like you've done something really good.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I've read a whole book.
Yeah, it's all about just feeling smug. That's
story
my
of my
gift
life.
To the readers.
Let me get someone to read out. It's fine. Now, we do a thing on Fun Kids. It's like a quick fire round for authors.
Right.
If that's okay, if you'd like to...
Absolutely not.
Yeah? Go on, I dare you. Right, okay, so... Books or Kindles?
Books.
Every author says that. I don't know why I even ask it to me. Heroes or villains?
Villains.
Film adaptation or TV adaptation?
TV.
Writing or reading?
Writing.
Oh, that was close. Designing cards or designing book covers?
Book covers.
No. Hogwarts or Narnia?
Neither.
What would you go for instead? Would you go for another magical world?
Hill Valley in Back to the Future.
Ah, okay. Yeah, good choice. Laptop or write by hand?
Write by hand, but I write on my laptop.
Rats or birds?
Birds, because I've had enough of rats.
Bookshop visit or school tour?
Probably a school tour.
School tour. And the most important one for all authors, salt and vinegar or cheese and onion?
Salt and vinegar.
Yes, that's the right answer. It comes up so many people say cheese and onion. It's obviously salt and vinegar.
I like both, but...
It's salt and vinegar, obviously. Brilliant. So the book is out, I think, is at the end of this month?
Yep.
It's out super soon. Mm-hmm. And you have another one in the works, maybe?
What, Future Rat Boy?
Yeah.
You never know. Maybe. He pops up in Barry Loser books as well.
Oh, cool. So there's like a crossover.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you
brilliant.
For having me.
Okay, so while Jim was here, what we thought we'd do was get him to do a little reading of one of his books. And I kind of muscled in on it. And I'm part of it as well. See if you can hear me. Here we go.
This is previously on Future Rat Boy. So it starts, "Hello, my name is Colin Lamppost. At least it used to be. Then one day, me and my cuddly toy bird were inside a wheelie bin when it got hit by lightning. We were zapped from our hometown of Schnozville, millions of years into the future, and I was transformed into a half boy, half rat, half TV. Future Rat Boy was born. Now I've got aerials sticking out of my head, a telly on my belly, a cape made out of a bin bag, and a plug tail hanging off my bum. Oh yeah, my cuddly toy bird got turned into a real life bird. He shouts not after everything I say.
Not!
Well, that's why I call him Notbird. Now we live with Bunny, the owner of Bunny Deli, the keelest burger shop in future Snozville. Keel is how we say cool in the future. Bunny Deli is also a sort of orphanage for children whose mums and dads aren't around. Like Jam Jar, whose mum and dad shrunk themselves to the size of full stops during a science experiment once. Jam Jar's got five arms and is really brainy. Then there's Two-Face, who thinks he's a superhero like me. His parents are too busy being real-life superheroes to look after him. And Splorg, the blue-skinned alien. Splorg's parents were eaten by a black hole when they went out to dinner one night.
Thank you very much to Jim Smith for coming by the Fun Kids studio. Right, so I am joined in studio by Frankie off of the weekend shows. Yay!
Hello!
Hello, Frankie, how are you doing?
I am very well, and I'm honoured to be here joining you. Did you know that Penguin Books started issuing paperbacks on the 30th of July, 1935?
how did you know that?
How did I know that? That's a very, very good question.
Yeah.
One which I will get back to you about at a later date.
But is that definitely real?
It's actually true.
Oh, it's actually true.
I looked it up because I was doing a feature for my show.
Uh-huh.
And I was just talking about what happened on this day in history. And yeah, it just happened. It came about and I just discovered this amazing thing. And yeah, Penguin Books released paperbacks and started the paperback revolution, some might say.
Oh my goodness, Frankie. I mean, I knew that you were clever, but I didn't know you'd give us this much stuff about books.
I wouldn't go that far, Bex.
Well, you know, don't do yourself down. Right, so you're here to tell me about your favourite ever book.
My favourite ever book?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a very big question.
And I want a good answer, no pressure. But again, first guest, probably give me a good answer. Maybe.
Okay, so I had a favourite book that I was going to tell you about. That was my favourite book when I was growing up. But then I read another book and it just blew them all out of the water.
Oh, wow.
So my favourite book is a bit of a classic. And it's been made into lots of different film adaptations. It's called Great Expectations. It's by Charles Dickens.
Oh, you've gone classics.
Yes, I've done it. I've only gone and done it, haven't I?
All right. Well, what is the story actually about?
So it's based around the main character, Pip, who starts the story as an orphan. He's growing up with his sister and her husband, Joe. And he just goes on this crazy roller coaster ride, meeting lots of different people. He meets somebody called Miss Havisham, who's a very wealthy widow. And she wants him to kind of have some kind of strange relationship with her daughter. They kind of meet, and she's a strange character as well. Her daughter's called Estella. And Estella's just a very, very strange character as well. She kind of, she seems to take pleasure in being mean to Pip. And he finds that quite strange, especially as a kid. You know, it's quite weird to think, why are these people being mean to me? Why are you so mean when I like you? So, you know, he meets this person and meets a whole load of different characters who keep changing his path and changing his fortunes constantly. And throughout the story, there are lots of different revelations and lots of twists and turns that constantly change the way that you think it's going to turn out. And so by the end of it, it just becomes this story that's gone on a complete whirlwind. And it's just really, really difficult to keep track of, but really great if you make it through.
Oh, that's a good answer. That was pretty concise.
Was it?
Yeah, I really want to read it now.
Have you not read it?
No.
No, what?
Yeah.
I'm really surprised. Bex, go and read it.
I'm intrigued.
Well, it's just an amazing story that takes lots of, loads and loads of different twists and turns. There are loads of amazing characters in it. It takes you all over the country. You know, you meet lots of different people. Miss Havisham is a really interesting character. I don't know if she's my favourite, but she's one that really sticks out because in every different adaptation of the book, she's been created in a completely different way. And so obviously everyone who's read the book has seen it in a different way and had their own interpretation. So they've had their own kind of vision of what these different characters have looked like. And it's really interesting to compare that to my own version.
So this isn't one of those things where you're like, yes, I have definitely read the book, but all you've done is like seen it on TV three times.
No. I've seen it on TV multiple times, right. But I've also read it a few times as well.
So how old were you when you first read it?
When I first read it, I think I was about 13.
Okay.
I think.
What made you pick it up off the shelf?
I was made to study it at school. And then it turns out that I really liked it. And that happened with quite a few stories, actually. It's, you know, we just happened to be studying them at school. And come to think of it, I don't think there were any stories that I really disliked, but I think Great Expectations just kind of stood out as the best one for me.
Have you read any other Charles Dickens?
Have I read other Charles Dickens books? I don't think I have, actually. That's really bad, isn't it? I mean, I think I've seen lots of adaptations of other Charles Dickens stories, but Great Expectations is the only one that I've read. Just because, let me explain myself here.
Okay.
I read it and I thought, this is amazing. How is it ever going to be better than this? I'm never going to read another Charles Dickens book because I don't want to ruin it for myself.
Is that a bit like how we started this by being like, we've got the best one here. It'll never be topped.
Yes. And so basically what we're saying is this is going to be the first and last edition of this podcast.
Is Pip the main character in Great?
Yes, he is. No, he is Pip.
Yeah.
And I think his proper name was Philip, but people just started calling him Pip. Or I can't actually remember. Or is that one of my friends? I might have got him mixed up with real life. See, that's how good the story is. I'm actually mixing it up with real life and I can't tell the difference. That's how you know it's a good story, when you're mixing up reality with the actual book.
And how many times have you read it?
Probably three times.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I've gone for the hat trick. I was kind of unsure whether I'd get the third one, but I stormed in and did it. I can't remember when that was, though. So obviously it's made a lasting mark on me because I can't remember when the last time I read it was. But I've read it at least a few times. But for each time that I've read it, I've probably seen about 5 different film adaptations of it.
Do you make a point of making sure that happens? Or does it just happen to...
No, it just happens organically because they make so many different versions of it that you can't avoid them. I mean, they just come out every other year, really, don't they?
I mean, yeah, I mean, Dickens is a pretty well-known, I guess. He's got some good stories up his sleeves.
He has. Yeah. I mean, Oliver Twist is another one of my favourites.
So at school, I had to write an essay on comparing Oliver Twist to Holes by Louisa Shaw.
Oh,
and
I haven't read that.
To this day, I've still never read Oliver Twist.
That's impressive.
I just basically have seen the film and kind of fudged it. And it was like, this happens in Holes, so I think it happens also in Oliver. And got an A.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a very good lesson for any prospective students. Okay, so just to put a disclaimer out there, if you are studying a book, it is definitely a good idea to read it.
Yeah, don't do what I did.
And I think that should be the first thing that you do, read the book.
Don't in any way do what I did.
If you are studying a book at school...
Yeah.
It's definitely a good idea to read it. I think that's the moral of the story.
Yeah, I should not have shared that story because, yeah, you're right. We should. Yeah, everyone just read a book. If you're going to talk about it, probably read. Like Frankie did. You're a good example.
Yes.
You've read the book 3 times and now you can talk about it properly.
I can talk about it properly and I still don't remember the story that well. So maybe I should read it again. Maybe I'm due another reading.
Well, let us know when you do.
Will do.
And thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to Frankie, and thank you to all of our guests on the Fun Kids Book Club podcast today. We'll be back very, very soon, but I suppose I should probably give you the answer to my trivia question. Okay, the question was, how many books have there been in the Hetty Feather series? And also, if you can name them, what are they called? Now, I can tell you there are 5 official books in the series, and here we go. There's Hetty Feather, Sapphire Battersea, Emerald Star, Diamond, and Little Stars. If you got that, give yourselves a pat on the back. And thank you very much for listening. See you, bye!